The following podcast contains spoilers. Check the episode description to see the exact times of the segments that contain spoilers. The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hello and welcome to the Vulture TV podcast. I'm Gazelle Amami, Vulture's TV editor, and I'm here with TV columnist Margaret Lyons and Vulture editor Alex Jung. Thanks for being with us today, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We're glad you're here.
I'm so excited to be initiated.
Why don't we start talking about what we watched on TV this past week? Anything stick out to you guys?
I started watching a new show on CNBC called Consumed, and it's about the restaurant industry. And I'm kind of maxed out on a lot of those like competitive restaurant kind of shows. And this show is more like a profile. And right now there's three restaurants on the show, but I believe over the course of the season, five total restaurants will be covered. It's a profile of like the chefs and owners of the meatball shop, Melba's, and Ann and Tony's. It might be called Tony and Ann's. I can't remember. And they're all just sort of in like different stages of success at their restaurants, whether they're expanding or franchising or being theoretically like bought possibly, or having like the building of the restaurants and getting sold, stuff like that. It's just really well done. And I think a lot of reality shows wind up really like goosing stuff up and having this very contrived sense of drama, and it doesn't really have that level of phony baloney bullshit. Like it felt, and maybe that's just savviness on the part of the producers and it is all phony baloney, but if they're getting one over on me, I salute them. Like I, right, like,
and it doesn't, still, it feels like there's still interesting drama going on that still doesn't feel.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the kind of thing where like anything that's about interesting people is going to be interesting, and then people who are passionate about something are just inherently interesting to me, whatever that passion is, right? Like I'd watch a show about like competitive team handball. If everyone really had a passion for that, it would be interesting because that's something I don't know anything about. And
you know, hear that, TV gods?
Yeah. Right. So my sister texted me and she was like, you got to watch this show. And I was like, I haven't heard of it. That's like unusual for a show to have escaped my radar completely. And I watched all three episodes on Saturday. I just thought it was terrific. And one of the things I really liked was that the producer asking questions, you can hear her ask some of the questions, right? So one of the women who's profiled, Melba, who runs a restaurant in Harlem called Melba's, she was talking about how when she started, she had saved up $300,000 like in cash that she was keeping under her mattress. And then the producer's like, wait, really? And you could hear her say that because it's like such a, it seems like such a big claim. And she's like, yeah, really? And it's like literally like in cash in your mattress. And they show the producer, like, wow. You don't see her on camera, but you see the sort of subtitles of her asking that. And I like it. I think it's a
That's super fun acknowledgement
that obviously a lot of these talking head interviews are prompted by and part of a conversation.
I wonder if we're going to see, and obviously we'll talk about this more with Unreal, but if you'll see the producer's hand more in actual reality TV shows or not. That would be kind of interesting.
Right. I think we're at a point now where the idea that there's no one producing it is, I think the audiences now are savvy enough to know that like someone is asking those questions.
And poking and prodding.
Yeah. And asking them in maybe a leading way.
Yeah.
Alex, do you have a moment?
Yeah. I've been mostly disappointed with Lip Sync Battle because I don't think the lip syncs are very good. Ooh. But this week, Queen Latifah went up against Marlon Wayans. And it was interesting because Marlon Wayans was terrible. Like, yeah. I think you were reminded that his comedy is no longer funny now in 2015 because all of his lip syncs basically consisted of like basically sexually harassing Chrissy Teigen and Queen Latifah and then making a gay joke at the end.
Oh, wow.
Of like, oh, now I'm going to like touch LL Cool J, or now I'm going to touch the male dancer as like a funny, haha, we're not really gay joke, which I'm like, come on, guys. It's too late for that now. But Queen Latifah was amazing. She did En Vogue, and she did LL Cool J's Rock the Bells, which I was, like, waiting for someone to do an LL Cool J song because no one did it. And that was his, like, big debut back in 1985. And she just, she killed it. And I was like, that's all I want to see. I just want to see someone do a good lip sync because the show is
that's what it's about.
Yeah. Just perform the song well.
Gazelle, did you have a TV moment this week?
I did. I'm going to go with Game of Thrones this week. We finally got kind of a blockbuster extended fight scene, which I liked because I wasn't expecting it. It came so late in the episode. It was 15 minutes long. I thought it was beautifully shot. So I loved that. And then the other part I loved was we finally got the payoff of seeing Tyrion and Daenerys interact. And this is just something I've been waiting for a really long time. So it was just fun to watch. I do think it felt maybe like they hit it off a little too fast, or there wasn't enough conflict between them. But I'm still okay with it because I'm glad to see where this plot line goes.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad. It feels like a lot of what Game of Thrones does in the early episodes is sort of tee up a bunch of things. And then in the second half of the season, like, start knocking them down. Mm-hmm. And it felt like this was the episode where it became very clear, things are getting knocked. Okay.
Right.
Like, the sort of rising action of the season is over, and now we're at the descending action. I was in the battle sequence when this, mm-hmm. I don't know if the character has a name, the, like, head White Walker guy.
Oh, the Night's King.
Okay. When he started raising his arms, I thought he was doing, like, what are you going to do? And instead he was like, I'm raising the dead now.
Oh, yeah.
But his arms kept raising. But at first it was just like, like a grandpa, like, oh, okay, well, I don't know what that is. Right?
Like, I thought, I really like this view into this character, Margaret.
No, that's what I thought he was doing when, like, Jon Snow's, like, rowing away and they're just like, bye. Like, I thought that's what the gesture was. And so I was like, this is a really long shot of that. Then I was like, he's rallying the deceased to become part of his clan or whatever. But so it took a turn for me. It was a definitely more interesting conclusion, I suppose. But I like the idea of there being just sort of like this, like, grouchy grandpa in the, like,
amidst the White Walkers.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, can't win them all.
So this week we're going to talk about some new summer shows that premiered Monday night. First, we'll talk about Lifetime's new scripted drama, Unreal, which is about reality TV producers on the set of this Bachelor knockoff type show.
Everlasting.
Everlasting. It's called Everlasting. Yes. Good name. And then we'll talk about The Whispers, which is a new ABC drama, kind of supernatural / horror. Anyways, it's about kids who are being manipulated by an imaginary friend, maybe. And there will be spoilers for both of these episodes ahead. And at the end, we'll answer any questions from you, our listeners, as well. If you have any questions for us, please email us at tvquestions@vulture.com. The new Lifetime drama, Unreal, follows Rachel, who's played by Shiri Appleby, and she's one of the producers on this reality show, Everlasting. The backstory we get on her, she had a meltdown in the previous season on this show, and now she's back, not super well-liked by everyone. And, you know, she and the other producers on the show have to manipulate the contestants to do horrible things to create dramatic moments that people will want to watch on TV. And it kind of examines the moral dilemmas they face in doing this. Well, specifically Rachel. We have a clip here that will give you a sense of how this works. This clip begins when the bachelorettes are arriving to the Everlasting Mansion to meet Adam, who is the bachelor this season.
Hi, I'm Faith.
Okay.
We just gave him a linebacker in a jumpsuit, and he just says, okay. That's our horse-faced tearjerker and mm-hmm. a virgin, right?
Yeah, but she is so shy about that stuff. We have so many other angles on her, you know, Jesus-freak boob job.
Those are my boobs. Well, I convinced her to get them. I even got Grandma's church to take up a collection to pay for them.
Grandma, nice, but whatever, all right? A train wreck like that's not staying past tonight. I need a soundbite before she goes. Adam, I want you to be my first, okay? Please, baby, Jesus. And then he dumps her, and it's perfect.
Margaret, you gave it a really...
I gave it a rave.
A rave
I love this
review
show.
For Margaret, yeah.
I really, really liked it, yeah.
Alex and I
yeah,
both agree
I'm
here.
Agree
we're
with you on
this is
too.
A show. This is a new Vulture show, we could say.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I really liked about it was that it's just not like any other show. Certainly right now, but I'm trying to think of other shows in the past that it reminds me of. And it's a real, I don't know what I would say, right? Like, maybe the closest one is, like, Party Down, but they don't actually have anything in common. I just think, like, tonally and
right,
attitude-wise, they have, like, similar views about the world. But the shows have nothing in common, really.
Right.
But,
one is a comedy,
but I think
one
if you
drama.
Like them, if you like one, you would probably like the other.
And there are elements of it being a procedural, too, in a weird way, right? Because they have to make an episode. And so
right,
you sort of watch them make the episode.
I think, like, week to week, that takes bigger and smaller roles. Like,
yeah.
So I've seen 5. Okay. I won't spoil. I'm not going to spoil anything. We were pretty clear about this, but we'll only ever talk about episodes that have aired. But I will say that the emphasis on the mechanics of that episode of Everlasting wax and wane over the course of at least the 5 episodes I've
That's
watched.
Smart.
Mm-hmm. I think what's helpful is they have that sort of infrastructure of an episode of a Bachelor kind of show, right? Where it's like, where you're all doing this like goofy task in the hope of winning the one-on-one date, and then we're going to go to the fantasy suite or whatever. And so they have those markers in the way that you would for an episode of that show, but then we're watching everything else surrounding that. So sometimes the mechanics of the episode of the show within the show take precedence, but oftentimes
right.
not.
We'll see producers pulling contestants aside to be like, hey, maybe you should approach Adam right now and be a little sexually forward, or you
have
know
a drink, loosen up.
Yeah, have a drink, loosen up, or like make sure that this one doesn't get any food because you want to see her be angry. I think also the show profoundly emphasizes the off screen material much more than what mm-hmm. the women and the suitor do, quote unquote, on screen.
Right.
Like, I think even when the mechanics of the episode are part of the story, what's much more interesting is how unrelated or distant they seem from everything that happens when the reality show is not filming.
Right.
And
this show airs, I believe, right after The Bachelorette airs on Monday night. So you could just watch The Bachelorette and then move right on into Unreal.
I think it's a good palate cleanser
yeah.
for The Bachelorette.
I mean, I'm somebody who was never a big watcher of Bachelor or Bachelorette. So I don't think that you have to be like a fan of the genre necessarily to enjoy the show. That said, I think if you are a fan of the genre, you might in particular enjoy the show.
Because it's like you get the fun elements of like a reality show, but you get so much more, obviously. And if you're someone who likes watching these kinds of interactions, I think it adds so much. I mean, not to say it's necessarily completely realistic. We obviously see some really over-the-top things happen that maybe wouldn't necessarily happen on The Bachelorette, particularly because I never think The Bachelorette is as interesting as the things that happen on Unreal. Like, it's really not that dramatic. You just hear people saying, I think I'm falling in love over and over again.
Yeah.
So
no, it's possible that Everlasting is ultimately a much better show
yeah.
than The Bachelor.
But I kind of want to bring the producers of Everlasting onto The Bachelorette.
Yeah.
And just start screaming, I need material for this episode.
Right, because if the people making The Bachelor, like, they're not that concerned about having material, clearly.
Right.
Like, there's no material
there's
on
nothing.
That show.
You're really not seeing yeah. any drama. I mean, I can't think of anything that compares to what we see on Everlasting.
Right. And so I generally have, like, an appetite for veracity, but I would say that I don't care at all if this is how shows are made.
Mm.
Right? Like, it certainly feels true enough.
I think that's true. I think, well, so one of I forget her name right now, but one of the producers of the show was a producer on The Bachelor for 9 years. So she's clearly, you know, taking from her experience and dramatizing it for the purposes of this show.
I don't know if this will change, but it does feel sort of very deeply cynical to me.
It's incredibly
yeah.
cynical.
And I like it.
And a lot of that is in Sherry Appleby's role.
Yeah.
No? What do you guys think of her?
I thought she killed it.
Yeah.
She does. And I think it's because she doesn't play it necessarily as this, like, obviously manipulative person.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She's sort of clever and sly in the way she manipulates people. Because she seems so chill and, like, down to earth. And, like, yeah, you would want to have a shot with her and just, like, chat on the lounge chair.
Right.
As she, like, gets you to spill your secrets.
But I think one of the interesting things about the way the character of Rachel works is that she's often tasked with manipulating the contestants. But even though we know that that's what she's doing, it's not at all clear how it's working or if it's working or that she's necessarily doing it. Right? Because it's like, oh, I thought her boss said that she had to get this crazy piece of dialogue. And it seems like she's blowing that off. Mm-hmm. But what she's actually doing is, like, using that to manipulate the participants in the show. So I very often found Rachel's performance of Rachel, right, to the Bachelorettes to be, like, really engaging and confusing and surprising, that there were moves where she's, you know, like, pulling some, like, reverse psychology stuff.
Yeah, she's like, acting like their buddy and then
right, or she's saying,
it.
Like, we got to do this part off mic and off camera. And it's like, oh, wow, she's really, like, going rogue. And it's like, oh, no, she's not. She just wants the contestant to think that's
right.
what they're doing. So they'll say something more candid.
Right.
And I think it's really effective in terms of building dramatic irony and also getting a real feel of, like, what Rachel's depths and skills are, because one of the reasons her character comes back to work on the show is that she's the best there is. Like even though she's had this meltdown and she's sort of a mess, right? Which I hesitate to say because then it makes it sound like this is some like quirky girl drama, which it's really, really not. But she's somebody dealing with like a lot of pretty serious issues, clearly, then the show takes that very seriously. But she's the best there is. She's incredibly good at grinding out these big moments and sort of tricking people or sometimes like just asking and they say yes. But she's very, very good as a puppet master. And we see that as something that she's sometimes a little bit proud of and sometimes a little bit ashamed of. But if that's your skill and that's how you've been making a living and for a long time it was something that was valorized in the world you were running around in, it's hard then to take a step back and say, oh, is this like hurtful to people or is this what they signed on for? And I think as the show goes on and we sort of see that taxing her in some ways. Like it's hard to do what she's doing. Partially because it's just like it's actually hard work. Like it's hard to be that on all the time. And then it's hard because, you know, there's still like shreds of personhood in her that have some regrets. And she's watching people in genuine emotional distress. And she's in some ways responsible for that. And that kind of becoming not as easy to metabolize as maybe it was at the beginning for her.
Yeah. And all the Bachelorettes, I think, are great, too, because they show such vulnerability behind the scenes in a way that, I don't know. Did you guys have a favorite contestant?
I definitely like Faith. She's the sort of like hunky-dory farm girl.
But she's
girl.
Also set up to be the most likable, too.
Right.
She is.
Watching it, I'm also constantly thinking about how I'm being manipulated as I'm watching the show about manipulation, too.
I really liked, what was her name? The one that gets cut in the first episode.
Oh, yeah.
She's such a good actress. I feel
like there's a moment where she like rolls her eyes, like in character.
Right.
Like the actress rolls her, or the character rolls her eyes. And it's so brutal.
Yeah.
Like she just is like looking around the set and she's sort of taking everything in and she has this realization of like, oh, I'm
the
victim.
Yeah.
Like
she's the one who's being framed as the villain.
Yeah, basically. She's getting kicked off first and they want her to have this like huge screaming meltdown or whatever. And instead she tries to get out of that and she's like, oh, I had a wonderful time and I'm sorry things didn't work out. But you see her kind of realizing, and I think in that moment it made me have like a little bit more empathy for people who participate on shows like The Bachelor, Bachelorette, where you do actually think like, oh, I would never come across that way.
Right.
I would be the one who kept it together. I would be the one who went in with my eyes wide open. I would be the one that wouldn't play these sort of like shticky bullshit game stuff. I wouldn't play a racial stereotype of my culture. I wouldn't, you know, call other women sluts or whatever. I would be the one who kept it together. I would behave as a good version of myself. And the truth is that, of course, you wouldn't, because that's how these shows work.
Right.
And if you actually could, you wouldn't have gotten cast in the first place.
And then you also kind of respect the people who then go in with a game plan, who are like, sure,
yeah,
I will
I'll
play
embrace
your
it.
Racist stereotype for you just so I can get ahead, so that they can do well in their business after.
I also want to talk a little bit about Marti Noxon. So Marti Noxon is one of the
show
creators.
Killer.
No, she's not a show killer. There was a time in like the late 90s, I think, where that was like a
common... Can you explain what a show killer is?
Sure, but I really, really don't think... I would not at all associate that with Marti Noxon.
No.
But a show killer is somebody whose affiliation with a show starts to spell certain demise. So once this person appears as a guest star or something, then the show is likely canceled. For a long time, that person was Paula Marshall, who had a very ill-fated run on several ABC series that were immediately canceled after her appearances. But Marti Noxon had come into a lot of shows, and then those shows were canceled. But I don't consider her a show killer, certainly.
No.
Obviously, come on.
And Marti Noxon created Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
She was a longtime producer.
A longtime producer.
Writer and producer. Nice. And she wrote for Grey's Anatomy a lot. She wrote for Mad Men a long time. She wrote The Hobo Code for Mad Men, which is, I think, one of the best episodes of the series.
She was on Glee, too, right?
Glee, yeah. And so I think this show is very her. It reminds me a lot of, like, the things that I like about her specific episodes and her writing style. It's, like, nasty but smart and really, like, sour about certain things and also really positive and upfront about other things. And I think, especially through the character of Rachel, we see somebody who is very smart, who is very capable, who has a lot of things going for her, and who sees the struggles ahead of her as not insurmountable, but still very real. And I think some of, like, the cynical honesty of the series is sort of that real Marti Noxon, like, sly voice about what are the ways we tell ourselves the story of what we're doing, and how often do we confront the lies in those stories, and how often do we just make a joke about it? Mm-hmm. I think the sense of humor of the show, which is strong, and you know, there's a lot of parts of the show that are very funny.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because all the characters are making jokes for the benefit of one another. Very rarely is the joke just for the benefit of the audience, right? These are funny people.
Right.
The characters themselves are funny, and they say things to each other to be funny. And I think that a lot of that is something I think is a big draw for a lot of Buffy episodes,
mm-hmm.
right, where the jokes are made for one another's benefit. And certainly on some of my favorite episodes of Grey's Anatomy, the jokes that the characters make to each other, especially in Marty Noxon episodes, like, I'm pretty sure she wrote the one where they're talking about McSteamy being really hot, and they're talking about, like, waves of deliciousness coming off of a, like, cartoon turkey. And it's just, like, an image that I was like, oh, that's a really funny way to talk about stuff. And also, that's the way you would talk about it with your friends, and sort of creating this sense of, like, real social intimacy that's very clear. It's very established very early on that
right.
these people, they're not just coworkers. Like, they know each other's shit.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're really very well. Much thrown in media res, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you just like, you're in this world and you just kind
it's
of
It's a little
to,
jarring.
Yeah, it yeah. is, in a good way. You mm-hmm. And you just keep watching to sort of figure out exactly what the dynamics
yeah.
are, what happened, what the histories are, how they're going to interact with each other.
I found I was sucked in even when I didn't really know how I felt about it. I was like, just what's going on
right.
here?
yeah, I was very taken by the show, especially because I feel like there are so many brutal shows on TV right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's weird because even though the show is relatively dark, I wouldn't consider it brutal in any way. Certainly not like, you know, your Outlanders, your Game of Thrones.
Right, right, right.
There's something quite so misery-driven or
right.
cataclysmic about it. And there's also, it's not a cop show. Which is an amazing relief. No one is a sheriff.
Well, and it proves you can be just as brutal in other ways. You don't have to fall on the same tropes in order to convey.
Right.
It can be a punch to the gut in the same kind of way, I feel
right,
like.
I think that there's like a, you know, there's a vast rainbow of kinds of human yeah, misery experiences.
Exactly.
And not all of them are like crazy torture.
There's so many ways to be nasty to
yeah.
each other.
Right. But the truth is, like, I think I certainly am maxed out on, you know, watching people getting beaten to death
mm-hmm.
and people getting stabbed. And I just feel like I've watched a lot of shows that have a lot of those elements in it. And it's not an inherently bad thing to depict, but it does have a cumulative effect of getting pretty exhausting. And I feel like in every way, this show is not like other shows that I'm watching right now. It's very much itself. It has a very different premise from other shows. I think the performances are pretty raw and interesting.
Except for the dudes.
Oh, right. So,
yeah.
so that
the
said,
the men are bad in this
yeah,
show.
Yeah. Well, so the guy, so Quinn is the managing producer.
Right. That's Constance Zimmer, and I think that character to me can get a little.
She's a little over the top.
Yeah, it can get a little Cruella de Vil when it's just like you want it to be evil for a purpose, not evil for evil.
Right. And she's having an affair with.
Craig Bierko.
Forget his name.
Chet.
And he's also
Tad Bod,
a producer on the show.
That's just, yeah.
I don't really find that compelling as
no,
a character.
No, I don't either.
No. Right. So even though this is a show I think we all like, there's definitely aspects of it that
there
I
are.
Could
yeah.
pass
yeah.
on. Like,
yeah.
Craig Bierko character is Chet, who's one of the like high-ranking producers on the show.
Or
He's the creator of the show.
It's clear he's rich, you know.
He's the boss,
he's
too.
The boss
he's,
man.
He's the top of the pyramid for the
right.
show. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's not the most compelling character.
No, and then we also have Rachel's ex-boyfriend, who's one of the cameramen
wah,
on the show.
Wah.
And then we have the
yeah.
suitor, Adam, who is...
I mean, I don't mind Adam.
Adam's fine.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like in this first episode, they kind of play off this dynamic between Adam and Rachel? Do you see a romance growing there at any point?
Yeah.
Like, they,
yeah.
it's going to go there.
Right, but what I think is interesting is we don't know if that's an actual thing
right.
or if that's something Rachel is
doing.
Performing
mm.
so Adam will
do what she wants.
Do what she wants.
Yeah.
Right.
Or that she'll be able to get him to say certain things and she'll edit it together. Because we see over and over the course of the show people saying stuff and it being taken profoundly out of context
mm-hmm.
for the purposes of Everlasting.
Right.
right. So we'll have somebody say like, God, I just never imagined that would happen. And what they're talking about is something completely different, right? And we see it recontextualized as about whatever the shenanigans were that have just occurred. But they were talking about like a sports event or something, right? Like
mm-hmm.
just completely outside of that context. So I think any possible, ooh, what's happening here? As if it's involving anyone who's on camera for Everlasting, I think Rachel's behavior is inherently in question.
Right. But I think watching the show, sort mm-hmm. of seeing whatever happens between Rachel and Adam, I'm interested to see how the show will end this season, in a sense.
Right, yeah.
Because I want to know how cynical it is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If it really believes in its cynicism or not, in some sense. I don't know.
Right,
I know that's
like,
fake.
Would next season be a whole new batch of people?
Right.
And then if we are going to sort of buy into maybe, like, an authentic romance with Rachel and Adam,
right.
Then what would they do next season? It's just,
right.
like, some dude or whatever. Or maybe it flips and it's all guys.
Right.
I don't know.
That's sort
yeah.
of what I assumed was going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
That they would
love
just
that.
Switch it up.
Well, the TV show we're discussing is called Unreal, and it airs Monday nights on Lifetime at 10 p.m. So The Whispers is a new ABC drama that also premiered Monday night, and it's about children who are being manipulated by what we think at first is an imaginary friend named Drill, who makes them do horrible things like try to kill their parents. And it turns out maybe this imaginary friend isn't actually, you know, an imaginary friend, but is operating some sort of force operating through a real person played by Milo Ventimiglia. And the show is actually based on a short story by Ray Bradbury called Zero Hour, where children help aliens invade the Earth. So that's kind of the backstory that I felt I was missing in the premiere episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the sort of global conspiracy stuff does develop as the episodes go on. I think we're led pretty quickly after the pilot into ideas that Drill is not just a vague nefarious force, but is a specific kind of nefarious force, and that it's not just, these aren't random children. These children
right.
have parents whose
are
jobs
important.
And like secret keeping has some value to whatever amorphous organization Drill is operating within.
Mm. Although the thing is, I'm like, children are not that dumb.
Right. Well, like, that's what I was thinking too. Or children would be more scared, you would think, of this voice speaking to them.
Like, I just don't believe that a little girl would be like, oh, I kind of almost killed my mom. Whoops.
Right.
Like, and sort of continue this relationship with Drill. Like, Drill
right.
just tried to make you kill your mom. You have an attachment to your mom that goes far beyond this friend.
It seems like they maybe try and explain that as Drill preys on children who are easily manipulated. We have a clip here of one of the children. This is the scene that opens the premiere. And she's speaking to Drill, who is getting her to play a game. We don't know what the game is yet, but this is before she tries to kill her mother.
If Daddy was home, he would have listened. But Daddy's gone. Daddy's always gone. Mommy says his job is very important. He's a scientist. He looks at stuff. I can't remember what now, but he said when I'm older, he'll show me the funny-looking buildings. No, I can do it, I promise.
Harper, time to get out of those wet clothes.
No, I don't want. I'm still learning all the rules.
Who are you talking to?
A friend.
What's your friend's name?
Drill.
That's an interesting name. Do you think Drill would like to join us for lunch?
He said that would be very amenable to him.
Amenable? Okay.
I mean, the reviews here have been kind of mixed, actually. Some people called it flat. Some people said it was a captivating mystery. Did the plot, like,
who
plot
said that?
Purely, like, were you grabbed by anything?
I like the premise,
yeah.
I think. Or, like, the original trailer,
mm-hmm.
which was, oh, creepy children possibly being manipulated to do creepy things. Which, I find children creepy, generally, so I'm, like, kind of on board with that.
Yeah.
But it's not actually creepy. Like, I just,
yeah.
watching it just doesn't, there's no sense of drama. It doesn't really have a, like, there's no mystery there. I just kind of don't care, and I get bored really, really quickly.
I think some of the original score for the show emphasizes how hard it is to know what's important, because, like,
mm-hmm.
the score is oppressive. Like, is it like,
rah,
rah,
yeah.
rah, 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 like, this is the important moment, and it's just, like, blaring at you, like, the sort of percussive parts of Lost, and, like, it's just, like, really screaming at you. Like,
and it,
this is the part that's bad and dangerous and scary,
mm-hmm.
and pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder, like, how. And, like, I think, you know, original scores add a tremendous amount, obviously, to every show. But if you have to hit it that hard to make it clear that this is what's important or this is the sort of scary dramatic twist,
right.
does that maybe indicate a failure on the part of the other kinds of storytelling that are part of the series. And I think the show struggles to make it clear what the important parts are.
And even the score doesn't always correspond with what is happening in terms of how dramatic. Like, I'm like expecting it to be more dramatic than it is because of the music. And then I'm like, wait, that's it? Like, we just got like flickering lights, and that was the big scary thing that happened.
Right, so it's definitely not horror. I wouldn't call it horror. There's not blood and guts and gore and stuff.
Sci-fi.
Yeah, I would put it as like a kind of maybe like a
thriller. That's what confused me about it, is because it was presenting itself as more of a horror show, but then there were these sci-fi elements that didn't make sense to me, and I couldn't. Whereas I think it actually is a sci-fi show, but it looks more like a horror focused show. So I couldn't quite. I felt like it didn't quite understand what it was, or I didn't feel like I could fully embrace either one of those genres here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of, so it is also a cop show, to be clear.
Right, then there's that. So, it's a bit of a procedural. Right,
poor Lily Rabe.
It's like, I really like her.
I really like her too.
Lily Rabe plays the child specialist detective who is kind of investigating these children's crimes.
Claire Bennegan?
Claire, yes.
And also, she's the parent of a young child who perhaps will, in his own way, fall into Drill's
nefarious schemes.
Yes. So there's a lot of stuff I didn't like about the show, but I actually, like, my overall take was that it's just like, oh, this isn't complete crap. And I know that sounds like faint praise, but, like, there's a lot of shows that I think are just, like, actually are complete crap. And so I liked that it had, you know, some cop procedural stuff that it was my distaste or exhaustion with that was like slightly alleviated by, oh, there's like this global conspiracy story and there is like a little bit more to it than, for example, like The Killing or Missing or Broadchurch or whatever, which are just like your traditional dead kid shows, which has now become like a weird tradition, I guess. There was like a little bit more to it, and there was maybe like some sci-fi stuff, which is not clear, right? It's not clear on the show that this is going in a sci-fi direction. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's based on a Ray Bradbury story, it's not clear how, like, that's a very, it's a short story, right? So to turn it into a miniseries or theoretically a series, I guess, if it does well, we're going to have to get pretty far from just the nuts and bolts of that story. So it's not clear how inspired it is just yet or how close that inspiration tracked. I guess I want more shows that have, like, sci-fi elements and thriller elements and you know, I'd rather have a sort of ambitious failure. And not that the show is hugely ambitious, but it's different than just another cop show.
I think the moment where it really lost me was when Claire finds out that her husband, Sean, is maybe missing and not really dead. And she gets off the phone, looks at the cop sketch of Sean that looks exactly,
exactly
like him, which never happens with cop sketches. And then it pans to photos of him and you discover that's her husband. It just all felt too, like, trying to be so dramatic and me feeling nothing in response to it.
Right. So that didn't get me in the sense of, like, holy crap, like, it's all coming together. But I was like, oh, thank God. Like, we're going to get this stuff out of the way very early, right? Uh-huh. And so we're not going to wait for that, like, it's all connected scene until, like, episode 9, even though the audience at that point will be like, it's definitely connected, right? Like, right? So I was relieved that sort of pacing-wise, the show decided, like, we're going to make a lot of this stuff
part
front-loaded.
Of the exposition.
Yeah. Like, that this is the thing that we're talking about, and there's not going to be, we're not dodging that idea. Because I think a lot of the times when shows try to create a longstanding mystery, it's just avoiding talking about what's very obviously the central idea is not actually a good substitute for what mystery actually is, right? Like, ignoring the process of figuring something out is not the same thing as having a hard time figuring something out. And so a mystery is when you have a hard time figuring it out, and denial is when you ignore the process, right? So I think a lot of shows sort of confuse denial for mystery. And I didn't think the show was doing that. Is it good? No, it's not that good. And I think if somebody was like, I guess my favorite show is The Whispers, I can't imagine us being, like, close friends, right? But, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think it was so bad.
No, you're right. It wasn't, like, trash. No, go ahead. Okay. I think
no,
it was.
Please go.
I think a lot of it for me depends on how the plot develops. And it could just be one of those fun shows that I watch where I can completely, like, turn my mind off and be like.
High praise from Kinsella. Yeah. I turned my mind off.
Turned my mind off and
just
I watched
watch
The Whispers.
So you think you can dance then?
And I will say there were like a couple little moments of the show that reminded me of American Gothic, which is one of my favorite shows in the 90s. That was like it was sort of in the X-Files era. Remember, like, the sort of recurring tagline was, like, there's someone at the door. You guys remember this?
No.
It's a kid from Sling Blade and Sarah Paulson. Okay, whatever. It was, like, a fucked up small town, and there was, like, the evil sheriff and stuff, and it was, like, weird and dark and messed up, and my sister and I were, like, it's too scary, but I love it. And so there was, like, some, like, anything that sort of can engender the sensation of American Gothic is something I will probably give another try to. And I think some of the... I think it's hard to make a kid spooky, right? That's why I think The Sixth Sense remains part of pop culture, is that, like, it's not just the twist, right? It's that it's actually very difficult to find a kid performer who can be cute enough to seem vulnerable, spooky enough that you're sort of thwarting expectations, and then competent enough as a performer to really carry a pretty heavy burden of the plot and action of the series. So I think, especially for Harper, the girl whose mom falls out of the treehouse, I actually thought she was great. She's very cute. And then she... speaks clearly. She doesn't have that, like, little kid phonology of flowing words or whatever. Very cute. Right? She doesn't do that.
Admonishment.
Right? So, yeah. So, like, so she says, like, a weird, like, sort of, like, hyper-articulate little kid. And so when she's being creepy, like, it's creepy. I thought it was genuinely
you're
creepy.
You're right. It is super creepy.
Not true of all the other kid performers on the show.
She's the creepiest
one. She's definitely the creepiest one.
She's the best kid.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
The best worst kid.
Right.
Yeah. But that's, like, to me, a huge relief, right? Like, and even the kids who are not as strong of a performer, there's no one where I was like, get me away from this child. Like, I didn't find any of the kid performances, like, painful and egregious, which is not true of every show that has kid performances.
There is a really big void of a kind of a good supernatural thriller. I just don't think it's this.
Well, the TV show we're discussing is The Whispers, and it airs Monday nights at 10 p.m. on ABC. Why don't we take a listener question, guys? We have a question from Laura, and Laura's question is it true that summer TV sucks? Does that stereotype hold true?
So I don't think so, right? So certainly for a long time, summer TV did suck.
But that's because TV sucked more.
And there was not much going on.
Right, and so overwhelmingly, stuff was in reruns over the summer, so there wasn't that much to watch. And then I think when we sort of saw the rise of primetime game shows and primetime network reality shows, those became cheap enough to program that became standard summer fare. Mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing now is a rise, especially for cable and streaming options, that is just as serious and compelling and good as anything. I think this sort of idea of year-round programming is becoming truer and truer and truer. So, for example, Orange is the New Black, right, that comes out
June 12th.
I would consider that part of the summer season. It's certainly after every network show has had its season finale for the traditional fall to spring TV season. That's as good a show as any, right? I think True Detective, I had mixed feelings about last season, certainly, but I think there are plenty of arguments to be made that this is, like, as
important.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, relevant as anything that airs in a regular fall
season. I mean, it's arguably one of the most highly anticipated shows, too.
I think HBO in particular is just, like, we're just going to run it whenever we want.
Right, so HBO obviously big programs in chunks, right? So right now we're at the tail end of the spring chunk, which is Game of Thrones, Veep, Silicon Valley, right? And that's on Sunday nights. And then earlier in the year we have Girls and
Looking.
But, like, HBO programs in sort of its own, like, quarters, basically. Mm-hmm. And then networks would typically program from, like, September, and those shows will run until May. But then even within there, we have shows that make mid-season premieres, and I think the mid-season shows used to be even, like, the real Always a Bridesmaids kinds of thing. And even those mid-season shows now are more substantial, more significant, have more to them, especially as we're changing programming from a show failed and now it's time for Plan B, and now we're also doing, like, so for example with, like, How to Get Away with Murder, that's going to air its whole season, and then we're going to do American Crime, right? Not because How to Get Away with Murder sucked or got canceled, but because it ran a fuller, shorter season with no reruns in between, right? Or we're going to program maybe, like, trimesters, right? We'll do a whole chunk with no reruns, a different show with no reruns, another, like, the second half of the season with no reruns, right? So we're getting more styles of programming. I think for this summer, we're looking at, like, as many new shows and certainly as many interesting shows as ever, especially, like, sci-fi and stuff like that, like the channel, not just the genre. Like, they're programming more stuff that's always been, like, a big summer channel, USA, TNT, right? Like, not that all of these shows are necessarily good, but there's probably something that you would find among the offerings that you would consider enjoyable over the course of your summer.
Well, I think, like, Unreal might be the good summer show for this.
Yeah, I think between that and Orange is the New Black, we're in for, like, a pretty good stories about women summer, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I think Unreal is good for this because it's smart, but most of all, it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
I just want something that's kind of juicy and a little delicious. has some, you know, has some good romance.
Yeah. I mean, I'm honestly, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm kind of excited for Ballers, the new show.
Yeah,
that's produced by The Rock.
I just like The Rock a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, it looks
like...
He has
so many muscles. That's the other thing I want for summer. I want muscles.
Yeah. I think the idea of fun...
Fun is... Yeah.
Right. I think sometimes when we talk about, especially, like, quote-unquote prestige TV,
right.
that fun becomes sort of a pejorative.
Right.
We're not. Like, yeah. Right now, certainly in the context of this conversation, like, fun is about as big a... praise term as we can come up with, like a show that's fun to watch that you really like look forward to, and when you see it on your DVR you're like, oh, that was tonight, yes. Like that feeling,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh yay,
fun is hard to do.
It is really
fun
hard.
Needs its respect.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
All right, that's it for this week's Vulture TV podcast. Please let us know what you think of the show. You'll find us on Twitter at Vulture, and you can email us any questions or comments at tvquestions@vulture.com. Our producer is Sarah Abdurrahman. Our senior producer is Laura Mayer. Andy Bowers is our executive producer. The Vulture TV podcast is part of the Panoply Network. Check out our entire roster of podcasts at itunes.com/panoply. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend and subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to leave us a rating or comment wherever you subscribe. I'm Gazelle Amami, and you can find me on Twitter at Gazellephant.
I'm Margaret Lyons, and you can find me on Twitter at MargeInCharge.
I'm Alex Jung, and you can find me on Twitter at E_AlexJung.
Thanks for listening.